The goals for today are to provide a primer of health care in America. That's number one goal. The second one is to share the process of the partnership search. And the third one is to discuss the public hospital district. So I'll just share those again. Provide a primer of health care in America, the process of the partnership search, and exploring the public hospital district. We'll have a panel here that will present on each of those topics. I'll introduce them in just a minute. I'm using the microphone because this meeting is being recorded, so we'll have microphones for people's questions. The panel has a microphone, I do, so we do ask you to use the microphones. Questions and comments will be taken from the floor. We ask that you state your name before you speak. And those questions that the panel is not able to answer, they will take your name and a way to contact you and make sure that you do get your questions answered. And just to make that very clear, at the side table over here are lots of pencils and pens. So feel free to write down your question if they don't get answered today or you don't get a chance to ask it. It can be turned in at the end of this meeting. And also, if you just don't feel like standing up and writing it down, standing up and asking it directly, you can write it down. We ask that there only be one comment or one question per person. And I have a handy-dandy timer here, so it'll let you know that there is a two-minute limit. I'm sure there are a lot of questions, so we would like everyone to respect the two-minute limit. And then, this is key, we ask that you not make another comment or ask another question until everyone who's had a chance to ask their first one gets that chance. That would be great. So we have to share with you this afternoon on our panel, we have Krista Campbell on the far side there, my far side, and Charlie Janeway in the middle there, and Bob Wilson right here. And then down here we have Peggy Means. And I believe we'll begin with you, Mr. Janeway.
Thank you. Can you all hear me? Great. Thank you so much for coming out today. You know, this we have just about a full house. And that just reinforces this sense of community that I have on this island that's so important to me. You know, that and the clinic are major factors for my wife and I coming to this island. So again, thank you for coming out. This is an important meeting. I think we all, I'm not the only one that feels that the clinic is so essential for our being here. But we now have a little anxiety around the clinic. Will the clinic still be here in light of this disaffiliation that we've had with Island Hospital? It's a scary time, and we share your feelings of unease, some anxiety, a little fear. We want you to know that the Katherine Washburn Medical Association and our search group are your friends. We're your neighbors. We believe in the clinic. We are determined that we have a clinic on Lopez. So we share your concerns, and we hope to lessen what we can about those concerns by sharing where we are, what we've done up to date, and our plans ahead. And so with that intro, we'll go on to Krista, or to Peggy, I guess, to give us an overview of healthcare in America.
No one's ever asked me to give a primer of healthcare before. but I am going to talk a little bit about the healthcare environment that we're in right now and why it matters for our discussion today.
I don't know how many of you know Peggy, but she's former COO of Fred Hutt. She has a vast knowledge in this area. I just thought they ought to know that.
Well, I have 35 years of healthcare management experience, lots of which is in partnerships, mergers, and family practice. So I just happen to have the perfect background for right now. So my poor husband has not seen much of me in the last 3 months as we've been working on this project together.
Can I add just one more comment to that, Peggy? Peggy has been giving so much of her time, endless hours, all pro bono. I mean, the rest of us, we get the credit of being on the board, but she has just kind of stepped in and been our Wonder Woman.
I have an 83-year-old father who lives on Lopez. He just moved here this fall, and I promised him that Dr. Bob would be his physician, and I intend to keep that promise. Okay, so I'd like to give you a little bit of background information about the clinic and how it's being affected by some of the recent changes. And even though we live on an island, we still are affected by all the changes that are happening in the healthcare system on the mainland. So the first thing that's important to know is that Lopez Clinic is certified by the federal government and our state as a rural health clinic. And that's important to know because rural health clinics have unique needs that make it difficult to behave like a normal family practice clinic, and they get special consideration by the federal government for that. Some of the differences between a rural health clinic and a normal family practice are the lack of a lot of the home care services that are available in urban and suburban areas, lack of an emergency room, few mental health resources, few substance abuse services, and limited rehabilitation services for people with strokes, cardiac problems, pulmonary problems. Those of you who spend a lot of time on the mainland getting these services know how challenging it is. And in addition to that environment, we have extra costs associated with the shortage of clinical providers that live on our island, and also remote location from laboratory, radiology, infusion therapy. And then finally, the provision of clinical support for patients who are waiting to be flown off or ambulanced off the island, which, as we all have experienced, can sometimes really disrupt services in the clinic. There are over 60 rural health clinics in Washington. We are one of four in San Juan County, and there are thousands across the country, and there are some of them who are much more remote than we are. For example, in North Dakota or Wyoming, where they might be 100 miles away from a hospital, and increasingly so because of closures of rural hospitals around the country. The reason why that's important is that if you think about our country, that flyover country is very large, and it has a lot of clinics in it. And no matter what else people are trying to do with some of these health reforms, there are a lot of representatives that care about their rural health clinics, and that's why it's important that we are one and that we have a lot of other people in our same situation. The other way that we're unlike a normal family practice is that we have a much higher proportion of our care that's funded by federal and state government. So you hear, I don't know if you guys hear about this, but in the healthcare business, we hear a lot about single payer systems, one person paying for all of care. Well, we already have almost 70% of our services that are provided by federal and state government. They're paid for by federal and state government because of the nature of our population. So nationally, and I just got these numbers at the hearing last week, of Tom Price when the head of the Senate committee reported them. Nationally, over 60% of the population has insurance provided by their employer. At our clinic, only 30% of our patient care services are billed to commercial insurance. Nationally, 18% of the population is on Medicare, but in our clinic, almost half of the patient services are billed to Medicare. And we are the same as the national average for Medicaid and AppleCare patients, that's what they're called in our state, with 22% of our services going to that patient group. So what does that mean? Well, it means that the Lopez Clinic depends on Medicare payments for a lot of its operating revenue. And right now, by being associated with Island Hospital, we are able to charge a little over $200 per visit to Medicare. Half of that goes to pay for the staff of our clinic, and the other half goes to pay for the support that the hospital provides for our clinic. If we operate on our own or with a partner that's not a rural hospital, the government says we only get $82 per visit. So that's a big reduction. This level of payment will not even cover all of our clinic staff salary and benefits, which average about $100 a visit. So that's half of our business. It won't cover any of the facilities or administrative costs of the clinic. For Medicaid, Washington State is even less generous than Medicare is. In past years, our reimbursement was about 50% of charges for Medicaid, but over the past year or two, it's gone down to a third, and that's because there are so many new patients on Medicaid and AppleCare, and also the state has moved to a managed care system there and doesn't charge on a fee-for-service basis anymore. So that's kind of some background, but then what's happening now that we should be looking at? Well, first of all, just in October, Medicare announced new regulations for physician payment. I didn't even know about these until I started working on this project. This is, you might recall that for about 10 years, they were always going to cut physician reimbursement, but they could never figure out how to do it. And finally, the Congress passed a law in 2015 of how they were going to do it. Just so you know, the person who negotiated that bipartisan bill passing is Tom Price, the new guy who they're talking about running Health and Human Services. So he's obviously got a big investment in that. These new rules say that there will be reductions in how physicians and nurse practitioners are paid, and a portion of the payment will be based on patient outcomes, such as reduced hospitalization or better medication control. Now, these kinds of payment structures that have these incentives on top of a fee-for-service kind of a way of providing payment are a real problem for the rural health clinics because we don't have very many resources in the community to coordinate care, and also we don't have sophisticated computer systems that help you figure out whether your depressed patient is taking their medication or not, or whether or not you had a rehospitalization of a cardiac patient. So the federal government actually recognizes this, and they exempted rural health clinics from these rules for 3 years. And then they said, well, that gives you time to get connected up with these other parts of the health system, and then you're going to have to follow those rules too. So that is one of the areas that has caused a lot of the rural clinics to start to question whether they want to be in the family practice clinic support business, because they realize that there's a lot of education that's going to have to go on. The other thing that's happening with Medicaid is that when the Affordable Care Act was implemented, our state was one of 32 states that decided to expand our Medicaid roles. So previously, most of the people on Medicaid in our state were children and disabled people. But with the passage of the Affordable Care Act, 25% of the people in our state became eligible for Medicaid. And a lot of the new people that have joined Medicaid had previously unmet healthcare needs. So, for example, 22% of adults who are on the Medicaid rolls have mental health issues that are just newly being addressed, and 14% have substance abuse problems. And many are recently released prisoners that have no job and no permanent housing. And so what happened is that the people in Medicaid actually wrote to the federal government and said, we've got all these unmet needs. Just give us a block grant of all the money we would have had, and we're going to take money from hospital and nursing home and emergency rooms and redirect it to some of these things that if we support them will lead to lower readmissions and fewer emergency room visits. And so that waiver was just granted to our state for this five-year demonstration project a couple of months ago. And nobody knows what it's going to mean for our state and how it's going to impact both hospitals and clinics. So the net effect of these changes on our clinic are hard to gauge. They're likely to result in a little bit less money, and this is all happening at a time when we have a new administration and a new Congress that are saying they're going to tear apart the old system and put in something completely new. And several people that I know listened to last week to the hearings where Tom Price, the new head of Medicare and Medicaid, talked to the Congress about what kinds of things he thought were going to be happening. And he indicated that his first priority was to make sure that all these newly insured people maintain their insurance and don't lose access to care. But he didn't really get into any specifics about how to make that happen. So why am I telling you all of this? It matters because there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty about these new payment methods and the fate of the Affordable Care Act. And this is causing hospitals, and we have heard this from so many different sources over the past month and a half. This is causing hospitals, clinics, and insurance providers to hunker down, cut costs, hoard cash, figure out who their primary market is, make sure that they're taking care of them. This uncertainty was definitely a factor in causing Island Hospital to end their partnership with us, because they're a public health district and we are not a member of that public health district. We are in a different county, and their allegiance has to be first to the people within their own county. And it's also causing other potential partners who have indicated that we are a great clinic and they would love to work with us, but right now they just have to say no because they have to make sure their core constituency is being served. So we have decisions to make about how we want to operate. Do we operate as a freestanding rural health clinic, keep our costs low, and trust that the government will find a way to rescue the rural health clinics in the current environment? Do we try to align with a larger health system that has great computer infrastructure and great care coordination structures that they can teach us about and help us to implement? Do we go one direction now and wait around for a year because things are going to get a lot more clarity and then circle back to these people and try to connect with them? These are the kinds of questions that the Katherine Washburn board and the clinic staff are investigating right now. And Krista Campbell and Dr. Bob Wilson will tell you about some of the actions that are being taken.